Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Sometimes we don't understand what is going on in our life. We don't know why there is so much turmoil and why people seem like they're out to get us. This is the way that David must have felt. In our study of 1 Samuel, we have seen David being pursued by King Saul. David had done nothing wrong, but Saul was trying to kill him. There are many valuable lessons for us in this story as we see how God uses people and circumstances to refine us more into the image of Jesus. As we join Pastor John today in chapter 23, we are seeing David in a tough spot as Saul is trying to kill him. With the story, here now is Pastor John.
God has a way of moving in, of protecting you, of helping me when it seems as though, oh no, this is it. I'm not going to survive. I'm through. I'm blue. I'm down. This is bad. But listen, right then, hey, the Philistines, God had stirred their hearts to launch this attack, this invasion. So Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. Therefore, they call the name of that place Selah Hamalekoth, which means the rock of division, or literally the rock of protection. I like that phrase. That's worth noting for you Bible students. David had no place to go. He was hemmed in. He was surrounded by the enemy, but there was a rock of protection that was between him and Saul, you see. The rock, our rock, the rock of ages, Jesus Christ. He's never let me down. He's never dropped the ball. So many times I've thought, I just can't figure this out. I don't know how this is going to work. But the Lord always comes through for me. He'll always come through for you. Even when we are faithless, he is what? Faithful still, because he cannot deny himself. And so Saul goes his way. Without striking a blow, David was delivered. Without striking a blow, without firing an arrow or hurling a spear or unsheathing a sword, David was delivered by the Lord. Sometimes when we try to take things into our hands, it just doesn't work out. I wonder how often we bruise the Lord's reputation because we feel like, hey, if it's to be, it's up to me. You know, inch by inch, anything's a cinch. And I'm going to make it happen, you see. And God might say, let the rock be your protection. You don't need to strike a blow. Just watch and see what I'll do as you trust in me. Interesting. David was protected by the Lord as this rumor, the Philistines are invading the land, and Saul hightailed it out of there that day. Well, David and his men, they went up from thence now that Saul had fled away, and they were now in En-Gedi, a lovely spot, a beautiful spot there in the desert area by the Dead Sea, where there is a natural spring that flows, and it's almost, oh, it's tropical, quite frankly. It's lush vegetation, and it's a beautiful place just to go and swim in the pools or stand under the waterfalls and find a cave and write some psalms like we often do. En-Gedi literally means the fount of the kid, and it's because goats, still to this day, mountain goats, they hang out there. And if I was a mountain goat, so would I, quite frankly. So David went there, a lovely spot where he wrote a number of psalms that we don't have time to look at tonight. Perhaps some other session we will do just that. David's now in En-Gedi, chapter 24. The plot thickens, the story continues. As he's there in the caves of En-Gedi, Saul now is back tracking down David again. He went and dealt with the Philistines, and now he makes his way back down south by the Dead Sea where David is to resume his hunt for David. Saul just doesn't give up. He's not getting it. He's in his passion, in his iniquity. He's just bent on destroying David, you see. So he gets his boys down there. They go to En-Gedi. It's hot. It gets to be 120 and higher down there by the Dead Sea. It's really hot. So in the middle of the day, Saul makes his way into the cave in chapter 24. We've also talked about this a few weeks ago. And as Saul makes his way into the cave to take a nap that day, lo and behold, the cave that he chose to take a siesta in just happened to be the cave where David and some of his boys were also hiding out in, deeper in the cave. And the fellow said, "Oh, David, this is your grand opportunity. God has blessed you. Lop off his head. Get rid of your enemy." And David didn't do that. You see, they thought, David's advisors, David's brothers, David's boys, they really thought, this is a God thing. David knew that it wasn't a God thing. "Those that trust in the Lord must not make haste," Isaiah 28:16 says to you and me. "Those that believe in the Lord shall not make haste." You don't just say, "Hey, great, this is my moment, whack." You see, you wait for the Lord to do what he wants to. One of the hardest lessons for me that I keep having to relearn over and over and over personally is just wait. Slow down. "But it's a God thing. Check this out. What an opportunity." Listen, listen carefully. David's men really thought that it was God's blessing. In reality, it was God's testing. God will often test you and test me when it seems to be a blessing for our grabbing. "Oh, what an opportunity. I can just grab this blessing. I can just take this blessing." But it's not really that. It's a test. "Will you wait on me, John? Will you wait for me, John? Will you trust in me? Or will you just grab the blessing that's right in front of you?" See, David's men really thought it was God's blessing that Saul was there sleeping in the cave. "Lop off his head, David. This is your day. God has blessed you." No, David said, "This isn't the way of the Lord." And you know what David did? We talked about that. He nipped the robe, the hem of Saul's robe. And later on he would say, "See, Saul, I could have killed you." He would shout to Saul, make himself known later on and say, "Here is the hem of your robe." As we talked about, that hem was not just a hem like that we would look at on our robes or Levi's or what have you, but there was the tying of strings and knots that we talked about at great length, which would indicate Saul's position, Saul's pedigree, Saul's place, his prosperity. And that's why, again, this border of blue that was to be on the robes of God's people later on, made of blue strings, that would indicate the position of the Jewish people. When David nicked that or cut that, what he was essentially saying is, "Your position has been cut off, Saul. I didn't lop off your head, but you need to know that you're through. Your number's up. Your position has been taken from you." But when he did that, David's heart smote him. And David said, "I shouldn't have done that." His heart smote him because verse 6 says, "I have stretched my hand against the Lord's anointed." The Lord's anointed? David, you're the Lord's anointed. David would say, "Oh no, I might be anointed to be king, but he is the instrument that God is using to work in my life, to bring me to the place where I need to be. And by my nicking him, cutting him, so to speak, in that way, I am in error." And David realized that that day. Well, we looked at chapter 24. Let's go to chapter 25, shall we? David realized that he was in error and was repentant about that, made himself known to Saul at the end of chapter 24. And Saul could see, oh, David, you had the opportunity to lop my head off and you didn't. You're a better man than I am. Saul was, at this time, at least temporarily, seemingly, broken. David, forgive me, was the idea, but it wasn't sincere, as we shall soon see. Saul said, David, you're a better man than me. And he went back to his home, and David then, verse 22, and his men left that place of En-Gedi. Well, now Samuel dies. And all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. Great lamentation. The prophet Samuel, you can recall his story earlier on in the book. This man of God who grew up in the tabernacle, who had a heart for the Lord, used by the Lord, spoke powerfully in the name of the Lord, but was rejected when the people of Israel said, we don't want you. We don't want God to be over us. We want a king like the nations round about us. They rejected Samuel. Samuel was weeping. God said, oh, Samuel, hey, they didn't reject you. They rejected me. Give them what they want. Let them have their king. It would be Saul, you see. So Samuel felt rejected, ignored, and left out, and not appreciated. But good news. You might feel that way too, but your funeral's coming. And when your funeral comes, people lament and they feel bad and they say nice things about you. So just hang on, your day is coming. See, they had rejected him. They had pushed him away. They had sent him off to pasture. You see, not to pastor, to pasture. But then he dies, and now all the people lament. It's the good thing about funerals. So, hey, just stick around, be that as it may. They lamented him that day. Now, there was a man in Maon. Again, this is a city of Judah, 8 miles south of Hebron. It's there south in the southern area of Judah, which is in the southern part of Israel. His possessions were in Carmel. Now, if you're thinking about a map, if you're aware of the topography of Israel and all the rest, you'll think, this guy's down south. Carmel is up north by Haifa on the coast. Well, yes, that's true, but there were two Carmels. One was up north, Mount Carmel, the northern part of Israel by Haifa, but there was a second smaller Carmel that was down south in this region. So this guy was living in the southern part of Judah, and he was a man that was very wealthy. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, which was a lot of sheep and goats in that day. He was a real wealthy guy, you see. His name, though, was Nabal, which means literally fool. And the name of his wife was Abigail, which means the joy of the father. This guy is a real idiot, as we shall see. And he's married to a woman who's the joy of the father. Spiritually, she was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. What a combination. Abigail is a real jewel. She's a giant in God's economy. The joy of the father who has good understanding, wise, and she has beautiful countenance. She is physically pretty as well. But the man was churlish and was evil in his doings. But he was of the house of Caleb. You might recall Caleb, Joshua's buddy. So the guy came from good stock. He has good pedigree, but he's an idiot. He's a fool, as we shall see. Well, David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, verse 4. So David sent 10 of his young men and said, go over to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus shall you say to him that liveth in prosperity, Nabal, peace be both to thee and to your house and peace unto all that you have. And now that I have heard that you have shearers out here shearing your sheep, and your shepherds, which were with us, we did not hurt them. Neither was there any sheep missing all the while that they were at Carmel. Ask your young men, verse 8, they'll tell you. Wherefore, let the young men find favor in thine eyes. For we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thy hand, to thy servants, and to David. So David's boys go to where Nabal is shearing his sheep and says, "Hey, this is a great day for you. You got all this profit coming in. You're doing well. You've been blessed, obviously. And not one of your sheep has been taken by any of us," David's boys would say. "We were in the area, but we respected your property and we protected your property," as we shall see a little bit later on in the story. "We respected your property. We protected your property. Banditos, sheep stealers, bad guys didn't bother you because we were in the area and we were protecting you. So now that you're taking in your haul, now that the harvest is coming in, the sheep are being sheared and all the rest, hey, you need to help us out. We're short on supplies. We need some help. We've protected you and we've honored these flocks of yours. So can you help us out?" David sent 10 men saying, "Oh, certainly Nabal will do that." That was custom in those days. That was custom at that time. If you were protected, you would pay for that protection. It wasn't extortion. We're not talking the mob here. We're talking about protecting from those that would be problematic. So David said, "Hey, go get some supplies. Nabal will certainly honor this request," you see. So David's men did just that. Well, Nabal, verse 10, this fool, he told David's 10 young men, 10 messengers, 10 servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? There are lots of servants these days that break away from their master. Who do you think David is, man? He's on the run from his master. He's fleeing from Saul. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men who I don't know who they are? I'm not going to help out you guys. Who do you think you are? Your master, your leader, David, is just a criminal, a fugitive on the run. I'm not going to do anything for him or for you." Well, David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told David all those sayings. The young man went and said to David, "Hey, David, here's what Nabal said. He said, you're a criminal. And who do you think you are? And he's not going to help you out or us out a bit." Well, David said unto his men, "Gird ye on every man his sword. Strap on your swords, boys. Mount up. Let's go. We'll show him exactly who we are. I'll let him know who I am. Put on your..." Now, I want you to see this. Take note, please. Because David, listen carefully, had just shown incredible wisdom when he didn't lop off Saul's head. And he felt terrible about just cutting Saul's robe a bit. Now, here's what you need to know. This is a truth of spiritual life. This is a real key. When you have a victory over a great temptation, you are vulnerable to a smaller one. Because you had victory in a great way, and something will come the next day. It's no biggie, and you won't even see it as a temptation, you see. Because you just had victory over something that was big, huge, a big temptation, and God graced you, and you had victory over there, so suddenly your guard is down, and something smaller comes my way, and the Song of Solomon declares to you and me, it is the little foxes, not the roaring lions, it's the little foxes that what? Destroy, you see. You need to take note of this. I need to remember this. We need to be aware of this. The reality is, you'll do well against the big temptations frequently. It's the next day that's tricky. Or 2 days down the road, you see, when all of a sudden, some little thing, and you'll say, "Okay, strap on your swords, boys. We'll go show him." This is so unlike David. Jesus said, if somebody doesn't receive you, you are to strap on your sword? No, he says you're to shake off the dust. You just shake off the dust and go down the road. Jesus didn't say strap on the sword. Jesus said shake off the dust. Now, strapping on the sword, I think of Peter. Remember how brave he was in the Garden of Gethsemane? When all of those soldiers were there, he took out his sword and said, "I'm going to protect you, Lord." The Lord said, "Put away your sword. Peter showed such courage. A few hours later, a little girl by the fire says, "Aren't you one of the followers of this Jesus of Nazareth?" And Peter swore and took an oath. "I don't know the man." "Peter, you were so brave just a few hours previously. You were ready to take on the whole army by yourself. And now you're caving in because a little girl says, 'Aren't you one of his followers?'" That's the way it is. It's not the big battles that'll get you. It's not the big temptation or the big challenge before you. It's the little things that come your way. Oh, you might, I might, we might be so spiritual, so successful in the arena publicly, only to go home and treat our wives or our husbands or our kids or our parents in a demeaning kind of way, you see. "Yeah, I'll show you a thing or two. I'll open up this book and strap on my sword and give you a verse. Put that in your heart, baby," you know. And yet in public, you know, in ministry, in the arena, the big issues, you see, we might navigate those successfully. Watch out. David is in error here. David's in error here. And it could have cost him dearly. David, a great victory in the previous chapter. But now he says, "Okay, let's go show those guys. We'll go lop off Nabal's head and the guys that are with him too. Strap on your swords. Let's go." He took 400 men. Now here's Nabal and a couple of sheep shearers out there. Now think about this. David didn't say, "Let's 10 of us go and deal with this issue." He takes 400 men. I mean, he's out for blood here. You know, he's been offended. He's been put down. He's got a fish to fry, a bone to pick, an axe to grind. And he takes 400 of his boys. We'll show him who we are. 400 guys come after me. You 200 stay here by the stuff. You 200 stay back. 400, let's go. Well, the plot thickens. But that'll have to wait for our study next week. May the Lord give you much wisdom in the little things that come your way. May the Lord give you understanding, not just in the big obvious attacks from the enemy, but the things that will happen on your drive home tonight and the way that you'll respond to your kids or your husband this evening. May you have victory there, particularly, especially. God's with you. He'll see you through. He'll be there for you. I guarantee he's made you aware of the enemy's strategy here tonight. Don't strike a blow. Just wait on the Lord. Just trust in him. He'll come through, the rock of protection, the rock of division, separating you from the one who wants to take you down, to wipe you out. Trust in the Lord. Oh, I know it seems like a blessing. Look what God has brought my way. I can lop off his head today. No, it's not a blessing. It's a testing. Others around you will say, "Look how he's blessed you." You must say, "No, this is a test for me, quite frankly. I'm not going to take things into my own hands. I'm going to wait for the Lord. I'm going to let him come through and do what he wants to. For that is the anointed issue to make me the man I'm supposed to be." Wait on the Lord. And he will see you through, I guarantee.
God will always see us through when we wait upon him. No matter what circumstances you find yourself in today, no matter who seems to be trying to do you in, wait upon the Lord and trust in him. You'll be glad you did.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
Most of us desire to spend more time in prayer, just talking with the Lord and hearing from him. But we often struggle in this area of prayer. In order to help us have a more consistent and effective prayer life, Pastor John has a book called Praying Through the Tabernacle. This book shows us a model of prayer that is based on the Old Testament tabernacle. This is a very practical tool for everyone who desires an intimate walk with the Lord. You may order Praying Through the Tabernacle from the Searchlight website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.